Okay, Sunday evening, we have the Better Health Radio Show on for you today. And on deck this evening, we've got Dr. Kia Lewis. She has her guests ready and waiting. So without further ado, let me skip on over and say a pleasant evening to Dr. Kia Lewis and welcome everybody to the Better Health Radio Show. Good evening, Doc.
Hi, good evening, Grayson. How are you?
Yes, I'm not too bad at all. What about yourself, please?
I'm cold, Gregston. I'm cold. I didn't get the sunshine that I asked you to send. I'm not sure what's happening.
We had a little bit today, though. We had a good set today, as a matter of fact.
Yeah?
Correct.
So I should be getting it, I don't know, sometime in this week.
We'll see if we can bottle it for you.
Much appreciated. I just want to say a warm welcome to our listeners here on the Better Health Radio Show. A show which is aimed at raising public awareness of common health issues that affect us all. It is always my pleasure to be with you, to be your host. And as usual, we are very much looking forward to an engaging and interactive session. And so I want to take the opportunity to remind you that the Better Health Show is not the same without you. So please feel free to contact us with your questions and comments, either by calling 434-1790, that's 434-1790, or you can send your WhatsApp messages to 266-4862, that's 266-4862. As you know, we like to be, very much aware of what is happening around us in terms of the health landscape and the discussions going on, and very recently, we've been hearing a lot about front of package warning labels. Some of you would have been keeping track of the discussion. Some of you, this might be new to you. But this evening, we want to have a discussion about front of pack warning labels. What do you need to know? How might they impact your health? And, you know, we just want to give you that information to empower you this evening. And as usual, we have our experts on deck with us. We're very, very pleased to welcome Miss Maisha Hutton and Miss Nicole Foster. I'm going to tell you a bit about them before I officially welcome them to the show. So Maisha Hutton has been the executive director of the Healthy Caribbean Coalition since 2012. The HCC is the only regional alliance of civil society organizations, and it's focused on the prevention and control of NCDs. At the HCC, Maisha is responsible for the daily operations, providing strategic oversight and management across all operational and programming areas, including accelerating food, tobacco, and alcohol policies, and advancing treatment and care for those living with non-communicable diseases. Maisha also serves as a member on the NCD Child Governing Council and the World Cancer Research Fund Policy Advisory Group, and she's chair of the steering committee of the Caribbean Public Health Law Forum. We want to wish you a warm welcome, Aisha.
Thank you, Dr. Lewis.
And we also have Ms. Nicole Foster with us. She's an attorney at law and a law lecturer at the Faculty of Law, University of the West Indies, CAFIL. She's also the founding head of its Law and Health Research Unit. Her areas of expertise are public international law, international human rights, international trade law, and global health law. Ms. Foster is also a former diplomat who acted as counselor in the permanent mission of Barbados to the UN and the World Trade Organization from 1999 to 2005. She also worked as the NCDs and mental health advisor for PAHO's sub-regional coordination program from July to September 2018. Besides her substantive posts at the UE, Ms. Foster is policy advisor with Healthy Caribbean Coalition, a member of the Barbados National NCD Commission, a member of the steering committee of the Caribbean Public Health Law Forum, a member of the CARICOM Interagency Technical Committee at the 6-point policy package for the prevention of childhood obesity, and a member of the Barbados Childhood Obesity Prevention Coalition. A real mouthful. Welcome, Nicole.
Thank you, Dr. Lewis. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes. And I want to say we are extremely pleased and privileged to have you with us. I'm aware that you are both experts on the front of package warning labels issue. And so I think that this is going to be a very rich evening. I want to encourage our listeners, like I said before, if this is something that you haven't heard about or you have some concerns about, please take the opportunity. The experts are here. Call in, ask your question, voice your opinion. We welcome that. We know that in Barbados, we talk a lot about the NCD situation. We've heard it said multiple times, more than 8 out of 10 persons die as a result of NCDs. And this is a pattern that we see not only in Barbados, but across the region, a significant issue with non-communicable diseases. And we've seen a number of solutions touted throughout the public to this particular issue, one of those being front of pack warning labels. I want to start with you, Maisha. I wonder if you could just give us an idea of what these front of pack warning labels are, because some people might not be familiar with the term.
Sure, Dr. Lewis. So think about when you go to the supermarket and you're trying to make a decision about whether or not you purchase a certain item, and you look at the information on the package. There's quite a bit of information on the front of the package, but there's also information on the back of the package. And oftentimes people are entirely confused because you're not sure what all of these numbers mean. And we quite often say that you almost need to be a nutritionist to understand the labels. So in order to help consumers understand quickly, clearly, and easily whether a food has certain levels of critical nutrients of public health concern, and that's things like salt, sugar, fat, there are these labels that go on the front of a package or can go on the front of the package, which indicate immediately that a product is high in sugar, it's high in sodium or salt, or it's high in fats. And the reason why this is so important is we know now that when people consume these nutrients, excess salt, excess fat, excess sugars, that leads to obesity and overweight and increases in the risk for NCDs and these diseases, which Dr. Lewis just referenced. When we talk about diabetes and cancer, heart disease, we now know very conclusively that unhealthy diets are the single greatest risk factor for development of NCDs. And so it's really important that we empower consumers to make decisions, positive decisions about their health with a number of tools. And one of the tools, which Dr. Lewis is referring to, and it's important that we remember it has to be a package of tools. It's not just one tool in an isolation. But one of the tools and the most central tool is this front of package warning label. It's really a critical tool, and we call it a foundational or enabling tool, because once consumers can very easily see, and I should have described what the label looks like. It's a black octagon, it's white and black, and it says bold letters high in, whether it's sugars, salts, or fats, instead of salt, sodium. I keep saying salt so that your listeners know that salt is really, sodium is the technical name for it, but that's when we say sodium, we mean salt. And when a product has, let's say a soft drink, has excess sugar, you'll see a high in, big black octagonal warning label on that drink. Or if it's a cookie, you may see a big black octagonal warning label that says high in sugar or high in saturated fats. And immediately you know, if you're diabetic, for example, you shouldn't be eating this food, or you should restrict or reduce the amount of that food that you consume. If you're someone who's hypertensive, like my mother, you really want to know which foods are high in salt. And this label helps you very easily identify those products. So it's a really important tool that we're starting to see all over the world. And we're now looking at it, as you said, Dr. Lewis, introducing it hopefully in the Caribbean very soon.
You mentioned a number of...
Sorry, Dr. Lewis.
Yeah, sure, Nicole.
Add something in there. I wanted to emphasize, you know, everything Maisha said is so correct, but I also wanted to emphasize that it's not even just important for, you know, diabetics or, you know, persons who have disease. I mean, so many people, myself included, you know, you're trying to make the right choice. You've made that decision. I want to make a healthy choice. I want to feed my kids healthy food. And you go into the supermarket and you pick up this stuff thinking that it is healthy. Because between the misleading marketing and the information on the back that you need a degree to figure out, a degree both in math and then nutrition to figure out, you know, you kind of do the quick math and you normally end up thinking, oh yeah, it's cool. And a lot of the times it isn't. So it is really, really important for persons who already have NCDs, yes, but also to just for the ordinary man on the street who's made that decision that I want to take care of my health, I want to make better choices for myself and for my kids, that this is a really important tool as well.
Nicole, I am so glad that you made that point. You two ladies started out very strong. And Maisha, I know Nicole talked about deceptive marketing, and it wasn't one of my planned questions, but I know we saw some trends even through COVID in terms of marketing in the region. And I think that as we look at front of pack warning labels, allowing us to make better decisions, what are some of the trends that we have seen in the region surrounding deceptive marketing practices?
Yeah, well, that's always been a challenge, and it continues to be a challenge. And as you said, with COVID, with everyone really shifting very much to an online virtual space, it presented a real opportunity for those who market unhealthy commodities or unhealthy products. And when we talk about that, we talk about food. We also talk about alcohol, and we talk about tobacco. And it provided a real opportunity to really amp up that marketing. And when we think about deceptive marketing, two things come to mind. One is, and Nicole alluded to it, when you see all of these health claims on products, this is super healthy for you. This is high in so-and-so, this will help you with your heart health. And then the other piece of deceptive marketing is marketing that targets children. And it's not only deceptive, it is predatory. And we say it's predatory because children really don't have the power to make informed decisions. They just see this marketing, which is very much targeting them. Whether it's cartoon characters, bright colors, snacks, or things within products that are inside of the packages, or what we're seeing a lot now too are these young influencers, as young as 4 and 5, who these companies hire to promote their products in social media. So when our children, and we talk about the transition we've experienced with COVID, they're now very much more online. Even post COVID, many classes are still online, and they created these habits. And so many of these manufacturers are targeting these children with these ads now too. And so we've definitely seen an uptick in it. And connecting that with the front of package warning labeling, what many countries that have implemented this way before us, and are now we're learning lessons coming out from these countries, they've said that if a product is high in any of these nutrients, then you cannot market it to children. You cannot put Tony the Tiger on, you cannot put, I really shouldn't say any names, but you cannot put any cartoon characters, nothing that will attract the child. And it's been a really powerful tool in those countries because you've seen an awareness in children in particular about the healthfulness of these foods. As Nicole mentioned, it's not only people living with NCDs, it's not only parents, but you're starting to see in these countries an awareness amongst children themselves that, they need to be aware of certain foods based on this label.
Awesome. So we have our first caller for the evening. Caller, welcome to Better Health.
Yes, thank you very much. Hi, great evening, Dr. Lewis. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Well, that's wonderful. That's great. Well, I love you for blessing me with your presence. Thank you that all my blessings come from you, because you bless someone I can curse. I should say, thank you very much. Thank God. I should say that, we in Barbados are willing to welcome you back, but you have to take the sun. So take the warm from this call as well. I hope you do.
Yeah.
We're warm here.
Much appreciated.
Yes, I have a couple.
Much appreciated.
Thanks. I'm glad to hear that. Yes, I appreciate that too. Because when I'm cold here, or when I'm too hot here, as I am now, I wish I was there cool like you. All right, so good evening. Yes, I have a couple of questions, please. The first question has to do, yes, good evening to the panel, and thank Grayson for taking my call. The first question has to do with who, what, where, when, why, and how is the rationale or the reasoning for these octagonal front of package warning labels? Why and how and where? Because you know that it's going to be an international drive, and what happens is that, if it's in another language or if it's in a different form to the disabled community, the Braille and so on, what about that language problem that you can find? Because even with, I was eating some chips last week, and I had some banana chips, and it was in Spanish, so I couldn't even understand what was happening there then. My second question has to deal with, so thank you for answering that. My second question has to deal with, I basically was an entrepreneur, and I wanted my products through the Barbados National Standards Institute to be better labeled as well, so that they could get understand the obviously the consumers that might not have all of that information at their fingertips and so on. And as you mentioned, they might not have a degree to learn about my product. So I wondered, what can I do? What was the channels that I could have gone through to be able to sort out and figure out how would I get my product from that end, not from the consumer end, from the entrepreneur and from the person who's actually making the product? What would I have to do in Barbados, since they're discussing it here, to finish or to go through to actually get those octagonal warning labels? What is the distribution channel that I would have to get to then disseminate that information to the public, which is what you're talking about on the topic tonight? My penultimate question has to do with, now, what about if one label has high in salt? Obviously, that the high end would be 10% or more, and the very high would be 15 to 20% or more. If it is high in salt or not, high in fat as well, does that, in terms of the actual nutrition part, because I know doctors now are trained in nutrition as well, there are courses for nutrition for doctors. So how, as a doctor, Dr. Lewis, would you be able then to advise your client, your patient, your customer even, as they come to you for this nutritional information based on the fact that they had their these particular types of labels? In other words, types that there's high in salt but it's low in fat, or it's high in fat but it's low in salt, or it's high in fat and salt. Obviously, you know, you wouldn't want to buy that product. You would want to buy something that's low. So in terms of the advice that you would give based on nutritional information and nutritional, what you would say, repertoire or forte as a doctor. And my final question has to do with the aspect of the nutritional package warning labels. And now you're talking about something to give customers empowerment in terms of better choices. Now, if I, as a person, don't want to eat healthy, I want to go on eating unhealthy. In other words, I couldn't care less. I just want to eat and I'll die. Obviously, you've given the solution to the package, in the package and at the front of it. In other words, what is the next step for the patient, the doctor, or consumer in the supermarket when they're trying to make a choice and they're having problems because they don't like what is good really for them? So what would that patient relation be in terms of the next step for the octagonal warning labels? What's the next step in terms of approaching people who don't even care about this step, as it is being made so well and so ably? You've brought it into my soul, Sharon, up there, girl. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chloe. You've raised a number of very good points. I'm actually going to toss the first question to Nicole, because it's actually one of my questions that I wanted to ask. And that was his first question. Why do we need octagonal labels? I'm kind of summarizing the questions, but what's the importance of that? And I guess you could look at it from different perspectives, but the human rights issue surrounding that, okay. Why octagonal warning labels?
So as you said, there are a number of justifications. The most pressing one, and most relevant one, being the health one, right? That Maisha already spoke to, where we know the evidence tells us that unhealthy diets is the major driver right now for non-communicable diseases. And therefore, we really want to put people in a better position to make more informed choices. And as Maisha said, it's not going to be operating in isolation. It'll be working with other things to help persons get along there. But then now, if we look at it from a sort of more formal or technical perspective, from the part one and labels, as the caller correctly said, is an empowerment tool, right? It speaks to consumers' right to know. We all have a right to know what is in our food. I, as a consumer, should not be going into a supermarket and thinking I'm buying something healthy, but in fact buying something unhealthy. with the best of intentions of the world, with me making every effort that I can to make that best choice, because the information provided to me is either inaccurate, deceptive, or insufficient for me to make that good choice, right? And so within the context of human rights, our states, all of these different, so, you know, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, we have also within the specific context of children, the Convention on the Rights of the Child, all of these things speak to your right to health, your right to information, your right to life, all of these things. And as part of our obligations as signatories to these treaties, governments have an obligation to fulfill, to respect, to both respect and fulfill persons' rights. And that involves, in part, something like octagonal warning labels, right? You need to provide the tools that allow people to live their best life in the context of fully realize their rights to health, life, education, all of these things. And sort of just linking this then to the, in fact, the latter question that the caller made, it is not a question where you're forcing people to do A, B, or C. Right, so it's not a situation where front of pack warning labels is intended to put you in a straight jacket, and you know you can never touch, you know, a whatever the product that is high end. No, and we want to, because you know, you as a human being, as an individual, you have the right to choice, right? And so we all go in the supermarket and we all make that choice as to what it is we want to eat or not eat, and really. The constituency that front of pack warning labels is really targeting is that significant constituency who really wants to make a better choice, right? But is hampered in the context of the lack of information and the misleading claims. And we have seen, like, the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Health in 2020 would have issued actually a statement strongly endorsing front of pack warning labels as a rights compliant response to states' obligation to respect and fulfill persons and protect. Respect, protect, and fulfill persons' right to health and other related human rights. And so why do we need front of pack warning labels? Because it's an important part of realizing our entitlements as human beings in terms of our human rights. And also, as I said, linked to that, it is an important part of ensuring that we're able to live healthy lives if that is what we choose.
Yeah, and I just want to agree with your point 150%, because there's something called informed consent when we look at the medical sphere of things. A patient comes into you and you're going to give a procedure or anything. You have to give them all the information necessary to make a choice. Now, giving them that information doesn't say to them that they have to take the procedure. They have to do the procedure. It allows them to make a choice. Right. And I think it's important that people understand that when we are putting these policies in place, this is not to restrict choice, but it is to allow facilitate choice. If people then choose to purchase these products, at least they know what they're purchasing. But to not allow people to know, you know, is deceptive, and it really isn't the right thing to do. I want to throw that question at you, Maisha, in terms of why we need octagonal labels. And I'm not going from the human rights perspective, but I want to look at the food environment in the region. Why is it so important for us in the region? Why do we need these front of pack warning labels?
Yeah, Dr. Lewis, I'm glad you asked that question. And I wanted to come back to this idea of choice. And I think that we all, you know, we do have a choice and we think we have a choice, but our food environments, from the time we are conceived, we are born, we grow, I mean, they are really created for profit. They're not created for health. The excess amount of ultra processed foods that we have in the region, you know, our countries as small island developing states, we import the vast majority of what we consume. And when we look at what we import, the vast majority of that are ultra processed products. These foods that are high in sodium, high in sugar, high in fat, these are the foods that are in packages that are really creating this massive challenge that we're having with obesity and overweight, where we now have 1 in 3 children who are overweight or obese. And I'm sure you would have seen that from the Heart and Stroke Foundation in Barbados's campaign. And so our food environments, like Dr. Lewis, like you're saying, is just so what we call obesogenic. They are the marketing that we are exposed to from the time we are children, the cheap cost of the food, the wide availability. We call them, they're extremely attractive, the colors. They're also called, we could say they're hyper palatable, which means they taste so good, and it's oftentimes hard to stop eating them, right? You pick up a bag of chips and you just keep going and going and going. And there's research out there that shows that these foods are highly addictive. So in response to all of that, in response to these exploding epidemics of obesity, overweight, and NCDs, the WHO, or the World Health Organization, and the Pan American Health Organization, and our very own Caribbean Public Health Agency have endorsed this package of policies that they are trying to implement to reshape the food environments. They're saying we need to turn the food environments upside down, so that instead of the kind of unhealthy choice being the easy choice because it's cheap, it's everywhere, the healthy choice then becomes the easy choice. And one of the tools to do that is having these labels on the front of the package. And oftentimes we think about kids, they think they don't want to eat healthy, but it's not that. It's just that what is everywhere is unhealthy food. What tastes the best is unhealthy food. So we need to have a reset, and this is one of the tools. I mean, the other tools that we have, I know we're speaking about front of package warning labeling, but it's important to understand that this is really, as we said, a part of a package. And we talk about fiscal policies, or, you know, when you tax an unhealthy product so it's much more expensive, and you subsidize at the same time a healthy product so it's affordable. And that's really key. You can't just tax and make unhealthy products more expensive without making at the same time healthy products affordable. You stop the marketing, which Dr. Lewis just talked about, to children in particular. You make spaces or settings, healthy settings, and you'll know, you probably are aware, caller, that the Heart and Stroke Foundation is supporting the school nutrition policy, which was just implemented, which removes sugar-sweetened beverages from schools as a first step. Next, they'll be moving to a wider category of these ultra-processed foods and also restricting marketing. We talk about, you know, the marketing of breast milk substitutes. So there's a whole package of policies which need to be implemented to help to make it, to help to make it easier for you as a consumer, you as an individual, you as a parent, a child, someone living with an NCD, to make healthy food choices.
Okay.
Just following off.
Dr. Lewis.
We have a caller?
Yeah, pardon me.
Okay, sure.
The caller is me. I have to take it back for me for just a couple of minutes. I beg your pardon.
Yeah,
we
sure.
have some housekeeping matters to attend to, and then right after that, I'll come right back to you and your guest. All right?
Sure,
all right, wonderful. Okay, ICBL advises our valued customers that due to the service challenges of our provider, our telephone lines are down and our internet connections are intermittent. For roadside emergencies, please call 266-0798, that's 266-0798, or 266-5144, 266-5144. We do apologize for any inconvenience caused. You're listening to the Better Health Radio Show. We rejoin the doctor and her team in just a second.
Me in National Hero Square on Tuesday, November 28th at 4:30 p.m. for the moving unveiling ceremony for the monument to all Barbadian families. Be there to witness history and the reveal of the stunning new artistic tribute to all Barbadian families past and present. And then it's all about the Independence Concert, an exciting and extremely talented cast of young and up-and-coming performers from all across Barbados. Dancers, spoken word artists, drummers, the National Youth Orchestra, Euphony Steel, the Israel Level Drummers, the Marlon Legal Voice Project, and the fantastic concert band led by Darian Bailey with Kashida Dawkins, German Waith, Shadia Marshall, Chris Irie, Simon Pike, the Mighty Bitbit, Barry Reed, King Shad, Risa Garnes, the Gemini Project, Patrick Ford, Pearl's Dance Academy, Sunrock, Elijah the Don, Asanta, Shantae, and many more. Bring your family and friends and celebrate Barbados at the unveiling ceremony of the Monument to the Barbadian Family and the Independence Concert on Tuesday, November 28th in National Hero Square. Happy Independence, Barbados.
Okay, we had a caller there for a while, ringing away, but I don't see it blinking now. But what I do have for you, Doc, comment here, it says, all of the talk about frontal package labeling, and then they put in capital letters, but Who is going to put these labels on? The manufacturers from whom we import? There are already label standards worldwide, and frontal package labels isn't one of them. Your turn, Doc.
Okay, so I'm going to actually cast that out to either Maisha or Nicole. Doesn't matter if you wanted to respond to this person's comment, to the person who would have messaged in.
So I'll maybe start off and Maisha can compliment as she likes. So I will more address the latter part of the question, which speaks to the fact that international standards don't require it. And no one has represented that they do. There are many things that are not required by international standards. Why? Because international standards are by definition, and I say this as an international lawyer, as someone who has worked in the international trade field for now over 15 years, represent a compromise, right? And so you're necessarily going to be at the lowest threshold, but always, always in those contexts, it is recognized and accepted and emphasized, in fact, that persons have, states have the space, the option to go higher once it is supported by evidence. And that is exactly what front-to-pack warning labels are. An evidence-based, proven tool that responds to a clearly demonstrated health problem. And which the evidence clearly shows makes an important contribution towards resolving that health problem. Now, it is not to say, as Maisha has emphasized consistently, it's not to say that that's going to be the silver bullet and solve everything. But the evidence is very clear that it makes an important contribution towards that idea as that she was talking about of resetting our food environment and resetting the space in which we make decisions and our ability to really make those informed decisions. Now, the earlier caller, actually, we hadn't touched on, they'd asked about Barbados National Standards Institution and stuff like that. These standards haven't been rolled out as yet. So I just wanted to clarify that. So they were saying, well, how would they get their product, you know, get the information to get their product, the labels on their product, etc. We unfortunately are not at the implementation stage yet. We're still at the stage of fighting to get this as a regional standard. So we were not quite there yet. But back on to the latter question. So the idea then is not that unless something is specifically prescribed internationally, that is the only space in which one could act. There would be very little, I must tell you, that would happen domestically or regionally if they had to be every time a prescription for it internationally. What you want to be sure of is that what you're doing is allowed. And what is very clear is that that's the case. And I'll kind of pause it there. I guess Maisha might want to jump on.
1 minute, before you jump on, we do have a caller. So I am going to just let that caller, you know, give their question or comment. Good evening. Welcome to Better Health.
Good evening to all.
Hi.
Our problem goes way beyond labeling. Right? And I'm going to choose my words very carefully. For years, we've been talking about people eating healthy. I personally think you need to start in the nursery schools, start educating our children, because a lot of people seem to have this misguided belief that children, because of the age, don't understand. That is not so. And what we need to do is to explain it to them in ways that they would understand. You need to go to our primary schools. With the overflowing of fast foods outlets that we have here, we are fastly becoming an unhealthy nation. There's no fast food in Barbados outlet that caters healthy food. None. Right? I drink lemonade. And my lemonade is a lime with water poured in it. I drink Morbi. Same thing. And that is something that all parents taught us when we were little children. You were asked to drink your Morbi, your tea, whatever. We took turns in it before sugar. At that time, I was vexed. As I grew, I learned what they were protecting us from. Sugar don't go sell for me. You don't have to sell. We have to. And then the next thing, I am sure there are a lot of people in this country that would love to eat healthy. But there are some people who can only eat what they can afford. A lot of the stuff that is going to make you well is very, very expensive. For instance, a sugar-free meal. It has one less ingredient, which is the sugar. Why then should I be paying more for something that contains less? Y'all understand what I'm saying? It is minus the sugar. So therefore, it should cost less. It costs more. And anything, any healthy stuff that you see that don't have these things, they're always much more expensive. And these are things that need to be looked into. You go in any supermarket, you see all the junk food, they're cheap, chocolate, the Conkers, all kind of things. The things that will cost to live a little bit longer are very, very expensive. I went to the market and I saw three tomatoes for over $10. And I asked why these are so expensive, or the importer. I said, you've got to deport them as far as I'm concerned because I'm banning them. What we need to do too, what little we can grow in our backyards, you don't have to have a base that a land to grow stuff. You can grow things in pots. Get an old plastic container, a plastic drum once it had in any chemicals, cut it lengthways, and you can create your own kitchen garden. If we cannot go in the stores or the supermarket, but we want to grow what we want. If I have a neighbor not growing once in a season, sweet peppers, and they eat sweet peppers, they eat tomatoes, grow one, and you all exchange. We need to go back to the way we used to live before. I remember a little child coming up, when you hear somebody died from cancer, used to be shocked. Now, that's a popular thing. But we can do better, but we have to change our eating habits, for sure. The things that are healthy, don't taste good. So we got to change we have to change our eating habit. And as far as the evidence goes, we need a label. We need a big thick red line drawn through this thing. Simple as that. Red indicates danger. Have a pleasant evening.
Thank you so much, caller. You have made some excellent points, and I think you can't see that I'm seeing the smiles of the panelists. You have captured so much of what we have said just from a layman's perspective and put it right back out there to the public. Things that Ms. Fatima has spoken about, you know, the shift in the food environment where we're using more ultra-processed foods compared to latter years, the need for it to be a package of policies. So you talked about educating children. We highlighted that with the school nutrition policy. You talked about food taxes, you know, the fact that things that are healthier are more expensive, so they need to reduce healthy foods and, you know, make that difference so that unhealthy foods are less accessible, they're more expensive. So you've tackled a number of things, and you've gone to the other extreme with the food labels. You know, you're going beyond just, you know, saying something is high into a big red mark. I don't know if we have the research to support that, Ms. Hutton. Maybe we'll get there one day, but just to say, excellent points, and we really, really appreciate your contribution. I wanted to pass back, though, to our guests. I wanted to ask a question about the issue of reformulation. I know that front of pack warning labels, one of the things that we hope to see is that people will, you know, make healthier choices, or at least be empowered to do so. But I also know that in other countries, we have seen reformulation. In England, for example, we've seen a significant reduction in the amount of sugars that are in sugar-sweetened beverages from the sugar-sweetened beverage tax.
And I know in other countries with front of pack warning labels, we've seen, you know, companies adjust to food policies. And this is why food policies are so powerful beyond just education, because like you said, they impact the food landscape. So I wondered if you could tell us about the how reformulation might affect, or rather how front of pack warning labels might affect reformulation.
Thanks, Dr. Lewis. I think you said it beautifully. When we put these octagonal warning labels or stamps on products, manufacturers don't want those stamps on their products because they deter purchase. And in an attempt to remove those stamps, they lower the level of either the salt or sodium, or the sugar or the saturated fats in their products so that they no longer attract a warning label. And as you said, it's been a really powerful tool. We've seen in Chile a significant reduction in the levels of these nutrients in foods as manufacturers seek to avoid labels, but also seek to meet this. You know, we heard Nicole talk earlier about there is a movement, people wanting to eat healthier. And so there's a market opportunity here. And the earlier caller talked about, you know, if he's an entrepreneur. And that's something that one of the messages we are trying to push with the octagonal warning labels is this presents a real opportunity for entrepreneurs, for those in the food industry to produce really healthy products. And the other caller talked about the fact that fast food, within the fast food landscape, there are very few healthy options. Well, these types of policies, all of them in concert, really try to create an environment in which the food manufacturers, food companies are now trying to appeal to a market that is demanding healthier options, demanding tasty, healthy options. So that reformulation piece is very, very important because we've seen the impact of it all over Latin America, where the warning labels have been implemented, and in countries, as Dr. Lewis said, where they have taxed, you know, even here in Barbados, we know that some of the manufacturers we've heard murmurings about reducing sugar levels in response to this tax, because it also, these policies are also a signal. They're a signal to manufacturers that they need to start making healthier products. And they're also a signal to the public that they should start consuming healthier options. When they see sugar-sweetened beverages that are extremely expensive, when they see warning labels, when they realize there's no longer marketing. So all of these initiatives really are an attempt to make it, as we've been repeating earlier over and over again, to really try and make the healthy choice the easiest choice.
Right. Okay, thanks, Maisha. We have a caller. Caller, welcome to the Better Health Program.
Good evening to you and your panel. In some restaurants, you'll find they have some healthy restaurants that you can go and get your stuff, but you have to pay. Okay? Then they have another type. For example, the juices are made of concentrate, right? And when they use the oil to fry the French fries, they don't throw away the oil, you know. They recycle it until the life out of it is totally dead, yeah? And they're all out to make profit. Yeah, and children and adults like fast foods, but they don't know the dangers of what is happening in these restaurants. Yeah, so unless you educate them and let them know what is going on, you have to talk to the management of these fast food restaurants and let them also include some healthy foods for those who can afford it. Yeah. And for those who can't afford it, we'll buy the concentrate and the recycle all that's from the chips and the chicken and all sorts of things and all the fancy chemicals that they put in the chicken and stuff. They don't use the natural seasonings and stuff. You've got to go in a cook shop to get natural seasonings and stuff like that in your meat, you know. And these are the things that we have been faced with since the fast food people come into Bow, because they're bringing the fast food restaurants to create jobs, but at the same time, giving people problems with their health. Because when you look to see what they're selling, right, it's mere junk, you know, and making people sick and then cluttering up the polyclinics and the hospitals. And then the taxpayers got to look, you know, to find money to keep these institutions running, and then people can complain, oh, the capacity fill up with people and stuff like that, but they ain't watching what they eat. That's what I have to say.
All right, caller, thank you so
thank
kindly.
Thank you so much, caller.
Yeah, Doc, before you get back to your panel, before you get back to your panel, again, pardon the interruption. I just want to make this comment that was hanging here for quite some time, and then you can carry on. I think I see the phone going again, but I'll get to that in a second. Good evening, Gregston and the rest of the panel. I have heard many discussions regarding labeling on items for consumption. While I'm aware of the dangers of using too much sugar and salt, there is another ingredient that's just as dangerous or even more lethal, but is never brought to the attention of the public. That additive is high fructose corn syrup. Most products contain this additive, which is highly inflammatory, but adds great taste. For example, tomato ketchup, used by most persons, but is found in many, many processed foods. This should also be highlighted.
Yeah, absolutely. High fructose corn syrup is a problem. And you will find it in a lot of products, and you will find that in those products usually drives up the sugar content. Yeah.
Yeah.
So very good point.
We do actually have ketchup that does not, because I buy the ketchup that does not contain high fructose corn syrup, but I'll tell you, it is pricey. And you know, so it goes back to the same conversation that we were having. But I wanted to say, in terms of the immediate past caller, just to clarify that this is a standard for prepackaged foods. So she was talking about very valid points, but speaking about the wider food environment, these orthogonal warning labels would only be attached to prepackaged foods. That's the nature of this standard. However, as Maisha was making the point, you know, and as I said, your points are very valid, that really this is part of a puzzle, right? We're creating building blocks. And so we recognize that our food environment is a problem. We recognize that it is highly obesogenic, outside of even just the prepackaged foods. And so we will need multiple tools to address these things. And so absolutely, we would want to have that there's greater access in our restaurants, in our shops, in our all of these places to healthier options. And that would be definitely part of the suite of options that we would be trying to put on the table. But in terms of front-to-pack warning labels, that is limited to prepackaged foods.
Excellent. Excellent point to make. We have another caller this evening. Caller, welcome to Better Health.
Yes, good evening. This is Anthony Hope calling. Hello to everybody there. I know the time is going. What I wanted to hear is, where are you going to target these labels, the octagonal labels? First, are you going to deal with shelf life? I mean, shelf life is very important. And in terms of Barbados, with all our grown provisions and stuff like that, would you be targeting the nutritional content of our grown provisions in relation to the proportions, and again, in relation to the shelf life?
Thank you so much, Mr. Ho.
So just to clarify once again, so this is a standard that is intended to deal with allowing persons to identify quickly, easily, and accurately foods that are prepackaged foods that are high in salt, sugar, and fat. The standard does not address anything outside of that context. So it is not dealing with issues to do with shelf life or those types of things. Those issues would be addressed in different standards. But this standard is just on the question of, is this product high in salt, sugar, or fat? It is part, as Maisha said, of this six-point policy package, the suite of measures that our Caribbean Public Health Agency has come up with as being the response for our childhood obesity epidemic and the broader epidemic of NCDs within this region. These other issues are broader issues of health, but that is not what, you know, the six-point policy package or front-to-pack warning labels themselves are intended to address.
Yeah, and I think it's important that we clarify that, you know, it's not a silver bullet. We said it's not for every and anything. It deals with a very particular issue. Maisha, I see you had some comments to make, and I have a question for you right after that.
Yeah, there's one more comment from the caller before we move on. Mr. Hope, could you very quickly?
I wanted to find out in terms of the packaged foods. Now, you talk about the sugar and the salt. Now, what I find is that the FDA has increased the sugar by 5 grams and reduced the salt by 1 gram. So you have 23 milligrams of salt and 55 milligrams of sugar. Now, would this be influenced by the what is the sugar and what is the salt, or it would just be a label that states this is what is going now?
So I don't know, Maisha, if you want to maybe explain about the Pahole nutrient model, because so we have an objective test. We have a standard that was developed by the PAHO, Pan-American Health Organization. It's called a PAHO nutrient profile that sort of taken as the experts in health working with FAO and some others, they have come up with what are the thresholds in terms of a balanced diet, you know, the different proportions, all of those things have been taken account of as by them as experts. And they have come up with this PAHO nutrient profile that then that is now our gold standard in terms of that's our frame of reference for determining whether something is high in salt, sugar, and fat. So it is an objective standard. It is not anything that is going to be influenced by what the US is doing or what Canada is doing or what Barbados is doing. If it's high, it's high. It doesn't matter which country it is that you're dealing with, because this is an objective, scientifically proven threshold profile that has been developed, as I said, by the Pan American Health Organization. But I don't know, Maisha, you might want to just add a little bit more onto that.
No, you covered it. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. So if you wanted to add, that's fine. I just wanted to get in a question because I know that we're very close to closing time. We've heard from different sectors of society, including the industry. They've said, you know, we're not opposed to front-of-pack warning labels, but it's the type. They have highlighted this over and over again. They've talked about the stoplight system and other systems that they would prefer. They've made the point, you know, that these systems are more popular. And they're really, people have really made a push. They've said that we are, you know, that you know, the argument is too narrow for this particular type, the octagonal label. Why the octagonal label? As I want to, before we close the program, I really want us to get an understanding of why we prefer, why we might prefer one type of label over the other.
Yeah, and I think I'll start and then Nicole can jump in. I mean, it goes back to, and I was going to mention earlier, what's the objective of the standard? What's the objective of the warning label? The objective of the warning label is to move people's consumption away from these ultra-processed products towards the fresh, healthy products like what the earlier caller spoke about. And this octagonal warning label has shown by evidence, repeated data from the region, to outperform or perform better than all of the other labels in helping consumers to move away from ultra-processed products towards healthier, real food that's minimally processed or unprocessed. The other labels are just not as effective. And it's just as simple as that. And it's based on scientific data.
Yeah. And just to compliment, go ahead.
Sorry, just to compliment what Maisha was saying, and it goes back to the point I was making earlier about the international standards space, and that, you know, it's about trying to establish not whether there's an international standard, but whether what you are wanting to do is something that's permitted by the rules generally. And what the rules say is that absolutely you can have a higher standard than what is the minimum level reflected in international standards, but that higher level of protection has to be linked, shown by evidence, to be the level that will better secure the particular problem that you're trying to resolve, that sort it out, right? And so in addition, besides the very valid point that Maisha made about, you know, what is it that we are about with the objective of this, and all the evidence showing that front-of-pack warning labels perform better in terms of allowing us to make those choices, then we also have to consider that when we go with these other options, which the evidence does not support as being effective in terms of our goal of moving people away, of allowing them to accurately, you know, quickly and efficiently identify these products high in these critical nutrients, these nutrients of concern, then we open ourselves to challenges.
Right. And I just want to clarify, when you say the other options, you mean the other types of front of pack warning labels, yes, as opposed to the tag on the label?
The US GD, you know, the facts up front, the traffic light system, all these other options that the private sector is so keen for us to default to over.
Right. So we have a caller. Caller, welcome to Better Health.
Thank you so much, and good evening to yourself and your fellow panelists. Yeah, I just quickly wanted
good
to...
Good evening.
Thank you. I just want to quickly mention that one of your panelists made a point that resonated with me when she said that the targeting of children with certain types of marketing is predatory. I think that is a very important concern. And I see it as actually being unethical and disrespectful to parents. Because if you accept that children are not experienced and informed enough to make mature choices, I think that going after children with any kind of marketing should be a no-no, right? And just quickly, I think an important aspect in encouraging our children to eat healthily has to do with the example set by the parents themselves, right? And while I acknowledge mm-hmm. it's easier to talk than actually execute, you know, because it comes down to personal discipline and so on. But what I would like to suggest is perhaps we could, you know, introduce a spiritual component, because I understand that the Adventists pay lots of attention to their dietary practices, and they have a reputation for being quite healthy and actually living longer. So perhaps we could get the so-called faith community on board, because they can really be influential in terms of getting their members to push. Pursue certain lifestyles. Maybe you can ask the churches to call all their fast on Christmas Day, because that's the time when we consume lots of unhealthy foods. I just thought I'd throw that into the mix, please. And thank you for listening.
Maybe overdo it. Yeah.
Maybe
thank you so much, caller. Excellent points to me.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. And let me just let you know, you're not far off the faith-based, in terms of the faith-based interventions. There's a lot of research out there that supports faith-based interventions for lifestyle changes. And they can be very, very effective. We've actually had studies here done in Barbados as well. So very, very good comments. Now, we're out of time. I just to give both Ms. Hutton and...
Doc, before you give your guest time to wrap up, let me just read this last comment, if you don't mind. This one. Yeah, this one says, why are none of the agencies who are pushing healthy eating not mentioning the words balanced diet? And there's another one complaining about they weren't hearing the word exercise in there somewhere. That was another comment. But this one continues to say, the Ministry of Education has released the National Schools Nutritional Policy, and that document doesn't mention anywhere within balanced diet. Okay. Why only talk about high warning labels and not increase exercise? Okay, here's exercise in this one. Cigarettes were taxed. Okay, so cigarettes were taxed to oblivion, but clearly visible is the amount of marijuana being smoked. The point being made is that labels will not make any difference. Soft drinks will be taxed higher. The said drinks, in most cases, do carry a black label showing the sugar content, and yet they are still a big seller. That's a comment from one of the WhatsAppers.
Are you sure? I'm going to throw that out to you. I'd like you to speak to the evidence, because there's some things that were said there, and I'm not sure that the evidence supports what was said.
Not at all.
Both Maisha and Nicole, if we have the time. So, yeah, you can just respond to that.
I think when we make these statements, we as individuals working in advocacy here, and also scientists, Nicole is, you know, at the law research unit, everything we say is driven by evidence. And so there is hard evidence that shows when these policies, including the front of package warning label, are introduced, that consumption or purchases of these products is reduced. And let me give you another example. We know that the SSB tax that was introduced in Barbados in 2015, we know that it reduced purchases of sugary beverages by almost 5%. That's the data showed that. We know that it increased purchases of water by 7 or 8%. So we know that these policies work. We know that in Latin America, where the octagonal warning label was introduced, we've had a significant reduction in purchase of these drinks and also the level of salt and sugar and fats that are contained within products is reduced as manufacturers respond to the labels. So the evidence is very clear. And it's very important to note that all of these policies are recommended because they are based on scientific evidence that is free of conflict of interest. And that last bit is important, but I don't think we have time to get into it. I'll let Nicole jump in.
Yeah, no, just to endorse what Maisha was saying, which is, you know, people so often fall. I always get people throwing out these comments. Oh, it doesn't work because I still see somebody drinking a soft drink. Guess what? But you're not saying all the people who are no longer buying the soft drinks, right? So nobody is saying that soft drinks are going to disappear off the shelf. Nobody is saying that these foods high in salt, sugar, and fat will disappear off the shelves either. What we're talking about is giving people a choice, an opportunity to make an informed choice. Many of us, and there's a significant, you know, the evidence supports that persons want to make better choices. When given in the supermarket, setting an option about buying things, people went with the product that was healthier, with all other things being equal, so not addressing cost. So the evidence is absolutely clear, and the fact that we have one or two people who will still choose to eat poorly, that is their entitlement, right? But that doesn't mean that the rest of us should all have to suffer because a few want to continue to eat poorly. And the evidence shows us that there's a better way. I also wanted to address the question about exercise. So this idea that we can't move ahead on anything unless we deal with everything, that just isn't practical, right? And when you look at Barbados's childhood obesity strategy, when you look at, you know, the different the documents coming out of the Ministry of Health, coming out of the World Health Organization, it is very clear that exercise is part of the package that we have been emphasizing over and over, that it is not just front-of-pack warning labels alone. But when you have evidence that tells you there are these five things you can do that will make a difference, but of those five, there is one that will make a tremendous difference over and above, you know, much a greater difference than the other four. Well, clearly you cannot be saying, well, until I could get all five done, I am going to do nothing. You would have, obviously, you have to prioritize. And in that context, the evidence says to us that unhealthy diets is the biggest driver. And in that context, it is very much linked not to the lack of exercise, which is a problem, but to our excessive consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages and foods high in fat, salt, and sugar. We have some of the highest rates of consumption of SSBs in the world. In the world.
Absolutely.
And so
absolutely.
In that context, we have to start there. We cannot be waiting to get all the other bits. As we progress, we will get the momentum. We will be able to provide support from one thing to another. And we already know what we need to do in terms of having very much exercise in our sight. But we recognize that exercise alone, we could exercise all day. And if you continue to eat poorly, you will continue to get poor results.
Excellent. Very, very well said, both of you. And the whole comment about balanced diet, let me make it clear to our listeners. We hear a lot about balance. A healthy diet is a balanced diet. Any document speaking to nutrition that speaks of a healthy diet or a shift to healthier practices, automatically we are speaking about a balanced diet. So we don't need to see a balanced diet. It is already implied when we say a healthy diet. With that, ladies, Gregson, I don't know if we have a minute to allow them to give closing comments.
Yes.
And be guided by you.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yes. So yes, I want to give you 30 seconds each. We've had a really robust discussion. We've had really great input from our callers and our messages. So I'm very grateful for that. But Maisha, in 30 seconds, what would you want our listeners to take away from this discussion?
Yeah, I'm going to go back to the evidence and just wrap up with a study that is kind of hot off the press from the University of the West Indies here in Barbados and the Pan American Health Organization, which found that if Barbados was to implement the octagonal warning label for just 1 year, it could potentially avert or save or prevent 16% of NCD deaths. Now that is a huge figure, and save the government $732 million in mortality costs. I mean, that is 15% of the GDP. So those figures are massive. The evidence speaks for itself. This is a policy or a standard we need to introduce, and we need to move quickly. As Nicole said, we just can't afford. We simply can't afford with the rates of NCDs and obesity that we have in our region not to move on these types of policies.
I want to make it clear, we're talking about octagonal front of package warning labels. Those that say high in fat, high in salt, high in sugar. That's the system that we're talking about. That's the evidence we're referring to. Nicole, your 30 seconds.
Yes, I want to say to persons that octagonal front of pack warning labels, octagonal warning labels are a rights compliant response. They're what we deserve. They are what our children deserve. We have to do better by our children. We are letting down our children hugely in so many areas, climate and otherwise. And the least we can do is to try what we can, what the evidence shows us works in terms of trying to secure a better future for them. And one step in that direction is the adoption of front-to-pack warning labels, which will allow them to realize their rights to life, health, education.
Comments. Barbadians, I want to tell you from as a doctor, we deserve better. We deserve better. We deserve to know what we're eating. We deserve to know what we're putting in our bodies. We deserve to be able to make choices that help to give us a healthy life, help to give our children a healthy life. And we have to fight for it. We have to encourage our government and the region, because this is the regional process. We didn't get to speak about that. But we have to advocate so that the region takes this seriously. And that we preserve not only life, but our budget, you know, that we cut back on the amount that we are spending on NCDs. This is very important for us now, but it's extremely important for the future and sustainability of Barbados and the wider Caribbean region. Thank you so much, ladies. Thank you for joining us in this very, very robust discussion. Thank you so much, Gregson and Tivyobi, for having us once again. And we look forward to you, our listeners, joining us again next week for another Better Health program.
All right, Doc. That's Dr. Kia Lewis this evening on deck for the Better Health Radio Show. And as our guests, you had Maisha Hutton and Nicole Foster. Thank you, kindly ladies. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. What's left of it. And I'm quite sure you'll be back on this program in the near future or later future. Thanks, Dr. Lewis. We will catch you next week or whatever next you will grace us with your presence. Take care, ladies. Have a good evening.
Yes, for sure, Greg. Okay, and you take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.